Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always,
Ben Vanel here, Tommy. Thanks for the stuttering, staggered intro, and with us.
No, do it quicker because I'm going to have to say,
my name's
Adam Knox, and get your phones off the table. I'm hearing your phone calls coming through. Hello, doctor's office. Yeah. Your dick's too small.
We're playing a game of poker at the same time, so Knox is very, like, scared about, you know, we're using the cameras, yeah. We're seeing his cards.
No mirrors. Don't look at my mirrored ceiling that I have across all over my house.
Yeah, Knox is wearing a pretty short little mini skirt, and I've now got my phone on the ground. And let me tell you, I'm in for a little treat when we finish this recording.
My hand contains a joker, and that is a reference to a game coming up.
That you have not played.
Interesting. Haven't I, Tommy?
Oh.
You haven't. I don't think you have.
You told us you weren't going to, so I certainly hope you haven't.
You said
don't
it.
You dare turn me down.
I have to. Listen, I'm on the ones and twos.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling about a 1 out of 10 today. So I will be.
You can just turn
adjusting.
The headphones down.
I refuse.
Okay. I've noticed what I do when I'll be talking and I'll see you go to the volume, presumably to turn me down because I'm being too loud, and then I get self-conscious about how loud I'm being.
And you start talking quieter.
The volume of my voice.
It's real fucking annoying. Because it's a minor adjustment.
Yeah.
And look, I probably sound way too loud at the moment too, so maybe I'm doing it terribly. It's hard. Here's a little podcasting tip for the pod hopefuls out there.
Yes.
One, don't bother. Two.
Yes.
Wear a suit made of sound baffling at all times.
Yeah. The sound of your own voice is horrific, and having it come through headphones while you're recording is traumatizing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say this because
that's a tip.
That's a tip.
Just be prepared for that.
Right. Sure, yeah.
Book therapy for after your first session of recording and editing. Because I do the ones and twos on the other podcast that I do, and I do the same thing. I'll kind of tweak the volume on the fly, but then I realize when I come to edit it, it's like that's just made it worse because now the volume for this person's track is completely inconsistent.
You can level it after the fact. It's completely unnecessary to do.
But it still feels like something you should be doing.
I know.
Lest you be asleep at the post.
It feels like a radio production thing, but all these tracks are completely isolated. You can adjust them much more easily after the fact.
When we do the video stuff, I'm on the ones and twos, and I set the volume sort of slightly lower than probably it needs to be.
Yes.
So no one peeks, and then I leave it alone.
But see, that's I do that too. Mm. But that's the smart thing to do because you can just boost later. You don't want people peeking.
But then the impulse of
when you can hear it coming through, you're like, this is a bit soft. It sounds bad to me. Right.
But then when I edit the videos, I have to adjust the audio, and I'm like, Ben, you should have done it live.
There's nothing worse than. Yeah, going through a track, and it's like you get the levels all kind of right of everyone, and then you get halfway through and you go, oh, that's right, I ended up boosting this person by two notches across the course of the recording. So by the end of the episode, they're just absolutely drowning everyone else out.
Yeah.
This is good stuff, folks. So
It certainly won't encourage more criticism of our audio levels than we've had before.
And it's also very funny to worry this much about audio levels when the content is this.
Exactly. exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Who cares
yeah.
if it's listenable when the actual content is like, yeah, I have to turn it. The knobs is harder than I well, would I
guess,
like it to be.
But I guess it is worth putting out there that this is what's in our heads, because as is the case with any kind of online criticism that you receive about something.
Which has never happened to me, so I'm having to imagine it. But
well, what
sure.
bothers me about it the most is like, you think this isn't stuff that's just on a loop in my own brain right. day in and day out?
Yeah.
It's like there's nothing you can say about the quality of this show that we haven't all fretted about individually and frequently over a long sleepless night at some point in yes. our lives.
We yeah. make this sound effortless, but yeah, we think about it constantly.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm pumping iron the whole time we do this as well, so it's true. A lot of effort
you
for me.
You have to keep turning away to breathe in and out.
Oh, sorry, I forgot to.
Yeah, yeah. Can we'll leave that one in the edit. Usually that all gets cut out. But.
Can you do an alternate cut of this part of the show?
No.
Where Ben's volume is just peaking, like up to like 10 decibels, and then I'm just dropped way down, like barely audible, and you've got like reverb on.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is how it could sound.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, what have you done?
I've turned you both down, and now the podcast is just me.
This is how it sounds in Adam's head.
No one could hear what you said then, Ben.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But I all bet right. they're hearing us a bit through your mic that's turned all the way up.
Because we're not fully professional. We don't have, like, we don't sit far enough apart that we don't get echoes in each other's mics.
Mm. No. And who wants that, you know? Mm. You want raw. This is like garage podcast.
Exactly. Yes. And look,
this is the nirvana of podcasts. I want to kill myself.
As you may have guessed, if you're tuning into this for our takes on the Sony State of Play that happened this morning, you are shit out of luck.
Mm-hmm. Well, it won't have happened, I think, by the time this podcast goes up.
It's like 6 or 7 hours afterwards, I think. Yeah.
So for once, we're not.
Friday morning?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So it's like 5 p.m. Pacific time or something in the US.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of Sony stuff that they've kind of, it seems as though maybe in response to the reactions people had to Nintendo's one last week where, you know, no expectations were managed.
Or for this at the moment, a company that's like, we got to get on the front foot.
Yeah.
We've announced a presentation that's shrouded in mystery. We got to manage some expectations.
And they jumped out and said,
no Zelda in the Sony presentation. No Breath of the Wild 2.
Little disappointing, but I'm glad they told us at least.
Yeah.
The biggest thing was they announced like, that they are working on a follow-up to the PSVR from the PS4 because it's a fucking hassle.
VIR.
What?
VIR.
Why?
Because V is 5.
Oh.
So shouldn't it just be VR then?
VIR, 6.
Because PSVR is PS5R to you.
Yes.
But it was on the PS4.
Yes.
Okay.
And just to be sure, we're coming through loud and clear right now.
Yeah.
Actually, you're a little low.
God, I wish we had a dump button on this thing.
I dropped my phone as well trying to look at the...
Boy, we are in all sorts
today. Today's not the day. If this is the first time anyone's listening, they were like, maybe I'll hire these guys to be my techs for something, then you still can.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're good at it normally. So there's a new PlayStation VR thing coming. The biggest thing that stood out for me is that it will be... Like, they didn't show any pictures or give too many details, but they're like, we've got a brand new controller that is using a lot of what we learned from the DualShock 5 or the DualSense, sorry.
Right.
Oh, wait, so a new controller for the VR as well.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That's cool, yeah.
So I'm assuming this will match kind of what, like, Oculus is doing now, where they say it's connectable by one cable to the PS5, which suggests that the headset will have cameras on it in the same way the Oculus does for tracking rather than using... Because the PSVR... Sorry, the PS5... camera.
Thank you.
For the PS4. Mm. I hate this naming convention that you made up now. The tracking kind of sucked sometimes on that thing.
And it's an old as hell camera, right? Like, it's not for VR. It wasn't for VR initially. It was just for the Move controllers, which are also extremely old.
And the Move controllers weren't for VR as well. Yeah. And then so they didn't have sticks on them, which affected the control. Like, I played some of the Hitman VR mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that great.
Yeah.
Because you've got to use the PS4 controller with it.
Right.
And it controls kind of your right arm, but also sort of both of your arms. And it just feels real shitty. And you've got to be facing directly towards the camera at all times when you're playing PSVR.
That became my big problem with it. I could never get the placement of the camera like just right. It felt like it was either... if I had it kind of clipped to the top of the TV, it was too high up. And I, yeah, I really only noticed it. Well, the only thing I ever really played with the Move controllers was Beat Saber. Mm. I was just kind of slipping out of the field constantly. And then when I got the Oculus, was just like, oh, this is, yeah, this is what this is meant to feel like. Yes. So like that technology already being out there and being, what, like a year and a half?
More than that.
Well, from when they were working on it. But yes. So, yeah, that technology being quite old now and what they'd be able to do now starting relatively from scratch and building on that when the blueprint is out there is really exciting. Yeah. Like them having a streamlined, their version of the little Oculus controllers that are built for this and not just using some existing kind of shit that they have.
Exactly. It felt very great. Kind of cobbled together almost, the old VR helm. And it's still good. And for the price, it's like a decent, it was a decent thing. I wouldn't bother getting one now because of this. But they've said it won't be coming in 2021. So you'd assume that means maybe next year, but it could even be further than that because it sounds like development kits just went out to studios now.
Right.
So it's probably even like maybe late 2022.
Sure.
VR.
Maybe, holiday. Holiday 2022.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even 2023 would still not be weird.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is exactly what you want there, up in the resolution and stuff like that.
Great.
Connecting it with one cable, huge. Yep.
So
it's
good.
A fucking hassle if it's not permanently set up to set up the PS4 one.
Yeah, the pass-through box, all of that shit. There's more than just the double HDMIs.
It was kind of fun putting it together for the first time. I felt like, God, I'm doing Lego here.
Yes.
This is like building some IKEA furniture, just this big book of like, now this cord has to go and then this little weird little box has to kind of...
It was all numbered. It was actually a really good quick start guide thing.
But that original box wouldn't do HDR or something, or even 4K maybe, which then became a problem when the Pro was around and now the PS5 obviously. So great that an update's coming. VR is here to stay.
Yes.
And also just it being a more kind of lightweight headset as well.
Yeah, you would have
would be the big thing.
Having a modern VR setup too that isn't tied to Facebook is great.
Very true.
So
Because that's the, like, the Quest 2 is fantastic. Tommy, we both own them. Nox, you got a Rift S?
Yes.
A
Rift 50 or whatever S is.
I don't think S is a Roman numeral. I don't think it is. But I don't have any issues with Facebook because I don't work for a news organization anymore.
Yep.
And that whole thing happened like last week. But heaps of people do. Heaps of people fucking hate Facebook for a good reason.
Yep.
And Sony are completely in the clear. They have no ethical issues with the construction of their tech or...
It was a bummer last week when I wasn't able to play the Batuta Advocate in VR anymore on my Oculus headset.
Some other stuff that Sony said is that Gran Turismo 7 is getting pushed back to next year as well.
Mm-hmm.
COVID hit that studio badly and so they need more time.
Yep.
Fair enough.
That is the thing too about the longer they take with this headset to come out, the more stuff there will already be out that they can kind of chuck a VR mode into.
We'll see.
Resident Evil 8, for example, like they had a mode in 7, so you would have to assume that there'll be like things like Gran Turismo that are out that they can just, you know, patch not long after the release of a headset, which
maybe
is beneficial to them.
That hasn't happened too much with a lot of games. I guess like the Wipeout Omega Collection, remember that? That got something. But I think, it won't happen for too much stuff would be my guess.
Yeah, but I mean, there being stuff that's out that, not that there'll be hundreds of things, but just like
Gran Turismo
having a few
sense.
Things that are there. Like even just if it's only Resident Evil and Gran Turismo, that's still very attractive to people out of the box.
Yeah,
if
I definitely,
it doesn't launch with any like... Matt, if it doesn't launch with heaps of new games that are VR exclusive.
I wouldn't expect it for Resident Evil because I think the way that 7 happened is Sony paid them to do it.
Right.
For the original thing and then they never brought that to PC and they've said nothing about it for 8.
Right.
Right.
But maybe.
Hey, Astro's Rescue Bot Mission 2?
Yeah.
Firmly agree. speaking of the PC, more Sony things are going to go to that as well. They said Days Gone being the first, and they're like, look out for more exclusives coming to PC. So that's cool.
Good of them to manage expectations, lest people run wild that there's going to be an announcement in this state of play about games going to the PC. Good of them to nip that one in the bud early.
I mean, they might. People have been talking about it ever since like Horizon and stuff came over, and Death Stranding 2 did. They those are the only things they said, and then they'll have like a half hour-ish one about however many hours after this goes up.
Yep. Mm.
So we'll
exciting.
Talk about that in a week.
Mm.
Another event
yes.
that happened,
mm-hmm.
A state of play-ish thing called mm. BlizzCon.
Ah, yes.
Which is short for Blizzard Convention.
Ah. Yeah, and this year it was called...
It was held in the state of Texas.
BlizzCon Line. Because it was online.
Do you know a funny thing? Did you hear the Metallica thing?
Yes, I did.
Man, yeah. It's so good. Yeah. If you didn't hear it, like Metallica were a bit, like they were a big force behind the
DRM.
Copyright issues yeah. that we have now because of Napster.
Mm-hmm.
They really went hard against that in like the early 2000s. And they were playing for BlizzCon over Twitch. And it automatically detected that, like, well, this is Metallica music.
Yep.
You can't be playing this. And muted right. Metallica and, like, played a royalty-free song over them instead.
Yeah. Real good.
So they were there, like, playing their Metallica guitars, like, beck, 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 yes. beck. I don't remember what the song was. Anyway, pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. Funny.
The other stuff that happened there, there's some World of Warcraft shit. I don't think any of us really can speak to that too much.
Mm-hmm.
But and, like, Hearthstone, which I haven't played in ages. More interesting to me is this Diablo 2 remaster that
yeah.
they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which looks pretty good.
It's still the best game of the trilogy.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm keen to play it again and play it in a convenient way. And it does look different.
Yeah.
It's been updated for sure. It's like fully 3D, still in an isometric view. I feel like a little character has been lost from the older one.
The graininess of that one was weirdly a part of it. I feel the same way about like Baldur's Gate and things like that
sure.
from around that time.
Yep.
Where when they remastered them to the high fidelity 2D looking graphics, it just looks a bit funny.
Yes. It feels like a different game almost. But then it was kind of crazy looking at some of like the armor sets and shit in these, you know, new 3D modes and being like, oh wow, that's what that looked like. Like that.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
And it feels like, you know, you put your glasses on finally. And that's pretty sick. And it's a great game. It's one of the best games of all time. So, yeah.
Hopefully more, because that Warcraft 3 remaster people hated for a lot of very valid seeming reasons. I don't think any of us played it. But
that was the one that deleted your old EXE of the original game when you installed it, I think.
And you couldn't install it anymore for some reason. Mm. It just wanted you to download that one. And then it broke a bunch of features that were in the original thing
yeah.
and didn't really improve too much.
Yeah.
This one looks to be on a better track than that, and it's coming to all the consoles and stuff too, which is nice.
Mm.
But yeah, it does look a little weird. Those like the old animations playing out on a prettier looking thing.
Mm.
It makes it look real clunky and strange.
Right.
As well.
Right.
A little more stuff about Diablo 4, which they also said is not coming this year, and Overwatch 2 not coming this year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, if you're into Blizzard games still, you know, you're probably already across this.
Yep.
Some like arcade collection, they called it, with the Lost Vikings, Blackthorn, and Rock and Roll Racing for like quite an expensive amount of money.
Mm.
I remember Lost Vikings and I remember Rock and Roll Racing.
Lost Vikings was great.
Right.
Touchstones of childhood PC gaming for me.
Hearthstones.
Excuse me?
I remember Blackthorn, weirdly, it being sort of that Prince of Persia style, you know, 2D running and jumping and shit like that.
Mm.
So, you know, between the three of us, we've covered all the games in the Blizzard Arcade Collection.
Yeah, let's do a review right now.
Okay.
Lost Vikings, I remember being good, but I think it's actually bad.
I agree.
Yeah, same with Blackthorn.
And Rock and Roll Racing, I'm actually, now that I think of it, I'm not sure whether I've played that or whether I'm getting it confused with the Biker Mice from Mars video game on the Super Nintendo.
Easy to do.
Yeah.
Those mice love their rock and roll as well. Old Limburger, the cheese guy who used to fight them, remember that?
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Fucking toy cartoons.
I just remember that. Did you ever play that game? It's like a racing game, but it's top-down, isometric kind of view, like Micro Machines style, those kind of racing games of the time where it's like, this kind of sucks to control.
I fucking hated the Biker Mice from Mars.
What?
I really, really didn't like their attitude.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They were willfully ignorant.
Yeah. Well, you're an authoritarian, so you hate that kind of rebellious stuff.
I don't want anyone sticking up against me.
Mm-hmm.
I want them stamping down like the street sharks.
And also, stay on Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Go back to... Anyway.
I can picture one of them in my head, but I couldn't tell you... any specifics about the show. What? I don't remember anything about what they used to get up to.
Yeah,
they were just fucking flubbing around the place, being like, "Blah, we're dumb mice."
Okay.
It was another Ninja Turtles ripoff, right? You had Samurai Mice. Pizza Cats, which was sick. Yeah. I loved that.
Street Is that a ripoff, though? Yep. That's like, I think that's kind of like its own Japanese
Samurai
thing.
Pizza Cats. It might have been around the same time, but it's got to have been inspired by, right?
There's no Ninja way Turtles. That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles who love pizza and the Samurai Pizza Cats are parallel
things. Samurai Pizza Cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I'm just trying to think because the fact that it's not Western makes me think that there's something. And they're a bit more like, they're in little robot suits and stuff, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. I loved them. I fucking loved them. And the Biker Mice. I had a Biker Mice toy. A mouse and a bike, and it was the best toy. It was so cool.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, I called it a Biker Mice toy. It was a mouse I found in the garden.
Yeah.
And a small tricycle. So, you know.
And then, you had your Street Sharks, your Battletoads. Mm-hmm.
Battletoads, I would say, are different. They're just anthropomorphic animals. But I'd they say don't have a.
They're in the same lineage.
It's like they're called like Rash and Zit and stuff. But how much is that is just 90s attitude, like the packet of Whiz Fizz. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they're little frogs. They look similar to the turtles too.
I don't think they exist without the turtles, but I don't care enough to dig more into it.
The Radical Burger Dogs. Do you remember them?
Oh, the Radical Burger.
I love the Radical Burger Dogs. Roo, give me a burger. I'm going to fight crime. Roo.
It's interesting that they're dogs, and hot dogs is not the tie-in, it's burger dogs.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were, well, burgers and dogs. They ate both.
Yeah.
There was the incredible chocolate cockroaches.
Yep.
Do you remember them? They'd be like, give me some chocolate.
There was a cartoon around that time about cockroaches.
Was there really?
Yeah, I forget what it was called.
You know what else happened in the 90s?
What?
The Rareware game Dinosaur Planet was changed into Star Fox Adventures
for the GameCube.
So a couple of weeks ago, that GoldenEye remaster for the 360 got leaked. This time, someone has found like almost finished code of Dinosaur Planet, and it's late enough that Star Fox is already in it.
Yes. Big Shiggy's come in. Famously, this was Rare's. This would have been Rare's swan song on the Nintendo 64.
And for Nintendo, it turned out, I guess. Yeah. This was their last Nintendo project.
Yeah, and it was like, I remember seeing the pics in the magazines. Looked beautiful, looked like a big. It was, slightly more serious tone than the stuff that they had been doing with Banjo-Kazooie and stuff.
Yeah, like a Zelda thing.
Yeah, big world to explore. And then
the planet of the dinosaurs was the world.
Well, that's kind of our planet, really, when you think about
holy
it.
Holy shit. Minute, what? A dinosaur coming back now being like, you blew it up. You son of a bitch.
Is Dinosaur Planet inspired by Biker Mice from Mars? Or is that it's not the same?
I mean, I haven't played this leaked code yet to see what kind of chewed the dinosaurs have. Okay. That's really the only thing that could answer that one.
I think they're a lot more whimsical and respectful.
Which
I don't like.
But yeah, famously, Miyamoto comes in and gets one look at what's going on and goes, you should chuck my characters, the Star Fox gang, into this. And when Shiggy speaks, you listen.
Yeah,
I imagine
because
him
he's
like,
never wrong, except in the handful of cases where he is wrong.
Yep.
And then
this
he gets
being
it
the
so
most famous of them all.
Yeah,
it gives the impression of him like eating a big plate of ribs or something, you know, and being like, mwah! How about you chuck the fucking fox guy I drew? And now, what do you reckon? Just get the fuck out of my ribs.
It is pretty interesting, this guy who like largely gets it to such a great degree and, you know, has built a reputation out of being the guy who just, you know, everything he touches, most of what he touches turns to good, you know, really.
By that
has
point, he hadn't missed.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
I think.
What are his other failures?
He did Mario, he did Zelda.
Yeah.
He did Star Fox. He did.
I think he's also known for like him just being, you know, stuff in Nintendo that he's not necessarily working on.
Right.
He'll come and
president.
Get a look at it and give a little, you know, he comes in and just goes like, hey, try putting this in. And there's a lot of stories where people are kind of up against a brick wall where they're like, how can we get this to work or make this a bit more interesting or seamless or whatever. And he's kind of the guy that just off the top of the dome.
Right.
Like, hey, try this.
Right.
And then people talk about him just finding things that open the whole thing up. Mm. And so, yeah, when he comes and gives you the feedback of try putting these characters in.
You're like, oh, I don't get it, but this dude invented the jump button.
Yeah, there must be a reason he's in charge and I'm not, so I'll listen to him. Yeah.
And I can also see being like, even though Rare had so much like clout and, you know, cachet at the time, still being like, oh, wow, this gets to go from just being a kind of a no-name new IP to something that's probably going to have a lot more eyes on it and maybe sell more because it's got this established brand attached to it. That's cool that he is not only letting us do it but like wants us to do it. And then, yeah, I've never played it. I've never played the finished product, but by all accounts, it's just – it's a bit of a mess. It's like the – The impression I got is like, why is this a Star Fox game?
Right.
You want to be hooning around in space and you do basically none of that. And then the exploration-y Zelda stuff is meant to be fine, I think.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so it sounds like it would have maybe been a good game if you hadn't shoehorned in characters that bring expectations with them.
Yeah.
Maybe. And like, it sounds like it was also a Nintendo 64 game that came out on the GameCube a bit later than maybe the development ideas. And also Rareware had some on and off things. You know, people like Jet Force Gemini, but I don't, I think that's one of their B games.
Right. Yeah.
It apparently feels similar to that.
Right. Okay.
Miyamoto also did Donkey Kong, of course.
Right.
He directed Excitebike.
Okay.
He did...
it's good that that's just like so long ago that we can't even really judge him on it or not. It's like, well, that's a really old game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess he gets a free pass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's the producer on a lot of things and the designer on a lot of things, you know. So right.
Excitebike is just such a funny outlier from the famous rev head that brought you Zelda and Pikmin.
It is funny that this dude has like, the design sensibility is to be like, I wanted to translate my childhood wandering the forest into a game and I pulled it off with Zelda.
Mm.
And then later on he's like, make that cunt my fox.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It is funny.
I was wandering through space. And I came across a fox and I thought, yeah, that's his.
Because that's right. Weren't the characters that Rare had originally in the game, were they foxes or they were...
So the only change I believe in this version is that he just looks like Star Fox.
Right. Okay.
What's all this bullshit? We can't have two Fox characters on this console.
He probably was just like, yeah, he looks like Star Fox or he looks like Fox McCloud.
Mm.
He calls him Star Fox.
Yeah.
He doesn't know.
that's great if that's all it was. Him just remarking on it. Meanwhile, Rareware, they've travelled over from the UK.
Yes.
They've had this meeting fresh off the plane, so they're jet-lagged to all buggery, and they've just misinterpreted it as them going like,
he said
we have to change the whole game.
We've got to put fucking Star Fox in this. I work for Rare.
So it is not like playable on an emulator, apparently, but you can play it if you've got like a flash cart for a 64, but not through to completion. It's not like finished.
Right.
But they reckon that like modders and stuff will be able to fuck
finish
with it.
Off.
Right.
Because it's like the same engine from Diddy Kong Racing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something like that. So they think it will at some point with, you know, work from the community be playable, which is really cool to me.
Yeah.
That's like great if they just have to like reuse assets from Diddy Kong Racing and just like you're on this beautiful dinosaur planet and then the final boss is Whiz Pig in a go-kart.
The other thing that I thought was news.
Yeah.
This is news to me. Yeah. That's really how news happens. Someone just makes a decision like, yeah, that sounds important.
Yeah.
Dog on a surfboard. We're a bit light tonight on the 6 p.m. bulletin. Chuck this one in.
This furry feline is fucking flying around. Get a load of this hang gliding cat.
They should be able to swear on the news.
That'd
honestly
be great.
Like an atrocity happens, just cutting back to the newscaster. What a fucking cunt act, honestly.
Fuck me. Honestly.
Well, you don't want it to be editorializing, though. So you just have to still read it like pretty blankly, but throw in like, fucking Scott Morrison today has announced
$25.
That's still editorializing.
But you're right. If you can show, it's an adult show, right? It's a serious adult show with horrible things happening on it.
I mean, explaining it that way does make it clear why they don't swear.
It is strange, though, that the,
it
yeah,
is
the
very
news
serious.
Is...
Yes, yes, that's true.
The news has more adult concepts in it on a daily basis than most, like, MA movies.
Mm.
But it's still on, like, straight after Rugrats in the evening.
Yeah.
It's no sense. But there should be a light... The late bulletin should have swearing in it.
Yes.
Like the 10:30 p.m. update.
Yep. I guess
I
we're
would
just
stay
talking
up to
about...
watch the news then if they're like, fucking hell, get a load of this.
Well, yeah. this is just the Daily Show that we've invented.
But they're not trying to be funny. I want to see Peter Hitchener just letting rip with a few F-bombs. He's not trying to make jokes and he's still not, you know, he's not really passing commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Just like...
Get a fucking load of this.
If you want, if you want like a visible facial expression that means the word fuck, then watch Sky News and every one of those cunts is just like... Fucking scowling at the camera all the time.
Yeah, probably true. More words that we wouldn't say personally.
Send these biker mice back! Yes. Sick of these Martians. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 is not coming out in 2021.
No.
Or being developed by the lead development team anymore.
Insane.
It seemed for a while like that thing was going south.
Yeah.
And it has now completely exploded. And my assumption would be that Paradox Interactive, who I guess are publishing it, want to restart it.
Yeah, it sounds
if you
like
fire
it.
The entire development team, that doesn't mean that you're retooling or whatever. That means you're going, this sucks.
Yep.
Bye. Mm. We'll get someone else in.
Mm.
Which is cool to me that they still want to do it, but I'm putting out a shit version.
We're letting you go because you've all done too good of a job. And honestly, you just spending any more time on this would be a waste.
So you're making the other development studios look bad here. So you've got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. You know, when a successful project ends and it's you get greeted with the CEO who shakes your hand and says, you're fired.
Yeah.
That's how it always goes.
I've been broken up with because the person was like, this has just been too good of a relationship.
Sorry.
And it seems unfair.
I had too many
to
orgasms.
Keep you
sorry.
From other people out there.
You just, I'm feel too safe and supported. Mm. Honestly, that does happen. that is true.
Yeah, okay.
This is the best person for me to be with. Better fuck it all up.
Yeah. So it looks like that's what's happened here.
Yeah.
The old high school crush of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
One of my old high school crushes loved it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Came back into our lives and then, maybe something could happen again with this.
No. I've changed for the better. You're the same. But yeah, it has been what, a decade?
16 years, I reckon.
I'll wait a few more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would way rather that this disappear and they redo it.
Mm.
Or even this disappears completely, so in the future maybe they could do it again.
Yep.
Mm.
Rather than have something dog shit come out and kill it forever.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Mass Effect Andromeda.
It sounds... It's shit for all the people who've lost their job, obviously.
Yeah,
like,
but
no
I mean,
good.
It sounds like they're not good enough at their jobs anyway. Nah. So they deserve to be fired.
Absolutely.
Send those biker mice home.
I hope that's one of the sentences that people think Adam says, not me. People get our voices confused a lot, apparently.
Well, that's probably because our levels are all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Someone messaged me asking me for they're like, oh, that movie that you talked about on the Patreon. Where'd you get that? I'm like, that was Ben.
Yeah.
That was Ben talking about a movie for 10 minutes.
We don't sound similar.
No.
I think we do.
Okay. All three of us?
Everyone on every podcast sounds similar.
That's actually a good point. Every time I've listened to a new podcast, it's taken me maybe 6 episodes for my brain to be able to like sift the voices apart and not just think it's one person talking constantly.
Yeah. Every stranger sounds the same and looks the same.
Yeah.
Like anyone who you don't know is a blank slate.
Mm. Well, this one I started listening to.
And I'm not interested in finding out more.
This one I've been listening to this week, it's three people that I know in real life and I can't fucking tell them apart on their podcast.
Well, that's stupid.
Well, maybe if I deliberately talk a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And you talk in the middle.
I'll talk in the middle.
And I'll go up here.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Now you can tell the difference between us. My name's Ben Vanell.
Right. I was going to say, we did not say our names.
So yeah, that guy, I want to say Chris Avalon, is that the person he was writing for it? And then like a bunch of shit happened with him and they tried to distance themselves. And then the lead director, I believe, quit or something. So it's had a fucked time, this game, and it is on indefinite hold.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh well.
Mm.
You know, a game that was not on indefinite hold because it came out here last week.
Wow. How does he do it?
I don't know.
How does Tommy Dasilo do these smooth segues?
It's like watching someone go down a water slide gracefully, but they're upside down and their pants are off.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they got there, but they look like a fucking idiot. Yeah, Persona 5 Strikers came out.
Now, yes, before we dive into this, I'll talk briefly about a game that I played for a reason.
Will you?
Yeah.
Interesting that you would presume.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So I was not super interested in Persona 5 Strikers. I haven't played any of the Warriors games.
Okay.
Wasn't really hooked into that style of combat at all and didn't know if I would like it. So I thought, I'll play some other games this week, you know, bring some things to the table. So I started playing Code Vein.
Oh,
I think this came out a while ago, but it dropped on PC Game Pass this week or last week.
Anime Dark Souls-y kind of thing, right?
Not quite as the combat is a little more lightweight and floaty than Dark Souls.
Okay.
But it is an anime bullshitty game with a whole bunch of weird lore and a crazy intro, a lot of cutscenes. Very customizable, different to the other JRPG stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But I was like, oh, this is, you know, maybe it's a similar sort of area. It'd be fun to compare these two. And I played it for like 2-3 hours. And it's terrible.
Okay.
It's a bad game. It's not fun. All the lore stuff just doesn't make any sense. And it's dropped in a really ungraceful way at the start of the game.
Uh-huh.
Did not want to keep playing it. And so I thought, if only there was a JRPG out there with a bunch of convoluted lore that I could play.
Convoluted lore. The saga of Ben's week.
Yeah.
This goes for 100 hours, I think you guys realize.
This is a 54-volume manga that you're...
Can we skip this?
Yeah.
No, you've got to watch it to understand who the characters are later. It gets good after he goes Super Saiyan.
Yeah, so I stopped playing Code Vein and I started playing Persona 5 Strikers.
Unbelievable stuff.
Right.
We were actually going to record this. We were talking about maybe doing this a day later because it came out officially on Tuesday, so the day before we were doing this, but then... After we recorded last week, Adam, you messaged the group to say that you could... I've not seen this before.
It's happened.
You bought the digital deluxe edition for, you know, $40 extra or whatever.
Mm.
Part of it was that you got to play it from Friday instead of from Tuesday. And bugger me down if I didn't race to get my credit card out of the wallet. It absolutely worked on me. And if every game that I was interested in had the option of paying $40 to $50 more to get
later.
It a few days early.
Yeah, they know that as well. It's because it's like,
I hate it. I hate that it worked.
Well, it's Battlefield and stuff started doing it. It has happened for a while with a few different games, but they do tend to be ones that old Moneybags isn't interested in. Moneybags is Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a practice that is also pretty widely disliked.
Right.
And I think for a very good reason.
I think it's better than just pre-ordering, because just pre-ordering puts money in a developer's pockets without the game even coming out.
Yes.
And can tend to lead to these inflated expectations and people being very disappointed because they're already invested emotionally in a game and financially. At least you get a game early by paying extra from this, but... Yeah, it's probably not a good practice to encourage.
All that,
it's
just
one of those crummy feeling things. It's hard to put into words why, but it's like, the VIP area awaits you, sir.
Right.
Please enjoy your weekend.
Well, and I was happy to do it largely for this because it meant, okay, I'll be able to actually put some proper time into it before we do the podcast, which is a good thing. But and also, I was excited to play it. But the unfortunate thing is I'm lucky that I'm financially in the position where I can do that and afford to do that. But for someone who would be looking forward to it even more, who's maybe a bit younger, who is, having to really save to get this game, it's just kind of unfair that someone who, probably when you're younger, you can't afford to do stuff like this and you would be looking forward to it way more than an...
And if your friends got to play it before you, you would be significantly more annoyed than not annoyed at all.
Well, and generally this type of thing happens with multiplayer games. And then so if you are coming onto that and other people are 5 days ahead of you, if you're competitive about it.
Right.
That is why they started doing that with Battlefield and shit, is to get in there early and fucking figure out how to kill everyone first.
Right.
Yep.
You've been sneaking around the warehouse for a while now. Then when everyone else comes in the warehouse... You know where you're going.
Yeah, you're sitting in the corner of the warehouse shooting them when they come through the door.
But I did find it weird, the it's the digital deluxe edition that had all this stuff that had the early access component of it.
And it's got like soundtracks from the old games.
And yeah. Like and so it was funny turning it on and getting like dozens of notifications in a row of like, this music's unlocked and this costume is unlocked and all this kind of stuff. And I was just looking at it going, you don't get it. I didn't pay this money for any of this shit. Yeah. I paid it for the fucking date.
Yeah, I want to play it now, and this is delaying me, all these fucking pop-ups. Exactly.
May as well have just waited for Tuesday.
Yes.
But so, yeah, it's a weird option that feels odd, but I guess it's not content that you're missing out on, so who cares at some point. So, yeah, it came out like a year ago in Japan. It's taken them that long to translate it over,
exactly,
I guess.
Exactly a year ago, in fact.
Oh. Like,
yeah, the 20th of February.
Happy birthday. Oh,
happy anniversary. He's walking. But they've gotten all of the original cast back, I think.
Yeah.
From Persona
so far,
5.
Where I'm up to, yeah.
And it feels completely like a sequel to Persona 5.
Yeah.
It is crazy, and it's given me like almost a off-putting. There's something that feels weird about it being a sequel
to
this game.
Yeah, it's strange because mechanically it's a spin-off. Mm-hmm. It's its own side thing. It's like a completely different game, but then aesthetically and presentation-wise, it's a direct sequel. That's canon. You know, it's not like happening in like a parallel side universe with the same characters or anything like that. It immediately follows on. And it's like it's a TV show and this is the second season.
Totally. It feels... I didn't realize... I knew, like, I had heard, like, oh, you can, like, go around and do some of the, you know, same stuff that you would do in the previous one in terms of, like, go and work in a job, go into the subway, you know, all of that shit, walking around. It's exactly the same. Like, I did not realize it was going to be so extremely close mechanically and presentation-wise.
Yeah.
I think bits of it are slightly scaled down. Like, the bonds are sort of done differently.
There's less of the side stuff kind of from the original where, like, the fortune tellers and all those sorts of characters.
Mm. Right.
You're not really doing that. It's kind of more of like a main line. But if you were to have played Persona 5 just going through the main story, it doesn't feel too dissimilar to that.
No.
But... except for every bit of the gameplay.
Yes.
But, like, you are running around the same areas. They look kind of worse now.
I think they look a bit better.
Yeah.
Everything is a lot more... We're all playing on the PS5, right?
PC.
On PC for you. The anti-aliasing stuff I've just noticed is shitty.
It's a little jaggy, but I didn't know if that was my screen and resolution and shit like that.
It is the game. Right. Like, Persona 5 looked better in that way.
Yeah, okay.
I think it looks a lot smoother, like, frame rate-wise.
Sure,
from playing 4, even 5 quite recently. Because even just, like, the little things of the little heads popping up and doing the text bubble stuff. Even that, just noticing like, oh, this is at a higher frame rate. And that may also be down to the fact that I was playing it on an original PS4.
Right.
Persona 5 Royal. So maybe it's upscaled on the... But either way.
I can't remember that bit. But it does... It's not... So it's not awful.
Mm.
It just like looks a little grainy and a little jagged, which you get used to very quickly.
And for me, only in certain bits. Only in like... The in-engine cutscenes, weirdly.
Right.
Combat looks great. And obviously the actual anime sections are cool. There's been heaps of them already. I'm like a couple hours in. And even I think walking around stuff looks great. I'm not noticing any jagged edges or anything.
And it's the same
weird parts.
It's the same style as the original, which is great.
Yes.
Booting all it the back menus up are and you get
slick.
You get a cutscene with a song. New song at the beginning. There's a lot of the songs and music tracks that you remember from the first one. There's also a bunch of new shit in there. There's like a more kind of like rock, like metal version of Last Surprise, which is like the main battle theme from Persona 5.
Which
so that
fits
kicking
a lot
in is
with
fucking
the,
awesome.
Yeah, and it fits with the change in gameplay from just like a turn-based thing. And it translates similar to how Hyrule Warriors did, the recent one, where the moves that you had in the original, it finds fun ways of incorporating them into this more action-focused thing.
So I think I'm 6 hours in or so. I'm just at the start of the second jail.
Yeah.
The kind of the big change in this one is that you're infiltrating jails instead of palaces, and there's the kind of the rulers of those jails have been able to kind of have followers and change people in the real world to kind of worship them by stealing their desires. So you're sort of, it's essentially the same thing with the palaces, but it's it's the gang getting back together, and there's kind of like a new, you know, it's not like exactly the same stuff. Right. It's like, no, this is parallel to what we were doing in the metaverse last time, but this is like a different sort of side of it that's being used and kind of corrupted in a different way. Mm. So
another mystery of like, what's the bigger thing going on?
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah. And it, and the benefit of it being, you know, having a lot of shorthand already, it assuming that it, I mean, I would say probably don't play this if you haven't played Persona 5. I think mechanically you could probably have fun with it and get on with it, but you just are going to miss so much of what's good about it. We'll just go completely over you.
Because it does a little bit to reintroduce the characters, because like quite early on you get a new character join your group.
Yeah.
Who then they take that opportunity to reintroduce everybody to her.
Which is like an hour in though, and it do, there's no, there's so much context. You're right. Like,
I just think it's not going to, and it's a big ask, I know, to go, if you are kind of interested in this style of gameplay, to go, no, you've got to go and do this other 100-hour thing first. But it is, it really is so worth it, because so much of the joy is the shorthand of getting straight back into, you know, in Persona 5, you're establishing this team over this 100-hour game, and some of those characters you don't really end up spending all that long with, because they're like the last person that you meet.
Haru is like...
Yeah, exactly. It is cool in this one that it's like, from the get-go, here's the whole gang, they're back together, and it's suddenly a little overwhelming to kind of choose your party out of having everyone instead of having your time to sort of get to mechanically work them out a little bit.
It's strange as well, because like, I'm really into where the story's going, and all of their characters are written well, like they're all completely back. Ryuji's Ryuji again, you know, like they haven't... It doesn't feel weird in the way that it feels like somebody else writing this thing that you know. It just feels weird to have put that story so much on a shelf in my head and then get a direct sequel to it. You know what I mean?
I know what you... Yeah, yeah.
Because it picks up like 3 or 4 months after the end of the original, and the original. Like none of the Royal stuff is in this one.
Yes.
Which is probably a bit weird if you played Royal.
It is a bit weird if I played Royal, yeah.
Like they just ignore, there's a new like main party member and they're just like, yeah, we're not going to bother with.
Yeah.
Which is great for me because I only played the original, so this is perfect.
They'll be in Persona 5 Strikers Royal, I guess.
Maybe. I could imagine that happening.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it's just, it's a little, I guess overwhelming is the same word, to pick back up with this group.
It's overwhelming too, like, yeah, mechanically the style of gameplay where I had, I didn't finish Persona 5 all that long ago. I finished Hyrule Warriors last week.
Right.
So I kind of thought I'm right in the sweet spot here, and I found it that's why I'm glad I had so much time, extra time to play it this week before talking about it, because I found it a lot harder to get a handle on mechanically than I thought I would. Right. Like I just assumed, oh, I'm right in the sweet spot here. I've just been playing heaps of this other game.
Yep.
This is just going to be a Persona skin transplanted on top of that. And it's not at all. Like a lot of the buttons are different. Like the dodge button is a completely different thing. Hyrule Warriors, you've got like the runes that just kind of recharge, and there's no real equivalent of that in this.
Right.
So it's different enough from both Hyrule Warriors and also from Persona 5 that like it does take a little while to gel, I think, anyway. Mm-hmm. But I found it kind of even more so the first 3 hours was just like...
It's throwing a lot at you quickly as well. Mm-hmm. Like just kind of popping up a thing of like, here's how this mechanic worked, and Hyrule Warriors did this too. And then you forget.
Yes.
Yeah, and or you take a while to sort of relearn it or figure out what the actual context or application of this ability is.
So the thing I found most jarring to... So it's basically... It's real-time combat. It's this style where there's, you know, often dozens or hundreds of enemies at once, and you are just like incredibly overpowered and able to just like kind of wipe out huge chunks of them with, you know, basically one blow.
Yeah.
So it's basically doing that. It's putting the Persona skin onto like an existing format while also trying to transplant the mechanics from Persona 5 and find a way to make them work in this real-time setting. And it kind of ends up being, I guess, pretty similar to the Final Fantasy VII remake in that
You can kind of pause and hang the thing up to choose an ability.
So
you've got you've just got your melee attacks, and then you've got, you can hold down R to kind of... stop time basically, pick an enemy on the battlefield and use your Persona... abilities, which are all elemental, and you're looking rock, for paper, weaknesses across the battlefield. You can do the same thing with your gun. Mm-hmm. That also slows time. So the thing I found most jarring is you're in these huge combat situations where part of the fun of this style of game is just cutting sick and feeling like you're just absolutely destroying these waves of enemies really quickly. But your elemental abilities are tied to SP, which you just churn through so quickly if you're trying to play this in a way, especially in the early stages before you've like built up how much SP you can have and how quickly it restores. So being in a jail and getting to a point where no one in my party has any SP left and I can't play this game in the way that's most fun to play, which is going into the battles and just absolutely devastating people with these huge fire attacks or whatever it is. And so having to like leave the jail to reset all the stats and go back in. I found that a little jarring to just get used to because it feels like it's putting in a very like stop start way of playing a game, which, you know, it's not the style that it's presenting to you. So but now that I've kind of got a bit more of a handle on that, it's really started to click.
I think I've probably benefited from not playing a similar style of game before, because the way I'm wrapping my head around it is, like you mentioned, like I'm just remapping how I played Persona 5 onto this new format of game. So I'm going, okay, I'm just going to do a lot of attacks and then, occasionally. And it is cool. I actually hadn't thought of how similar it is to the Final Fantasy, the last couple of games.
And going from Final Fantasy 7 to the remake, it's not that different of a transition.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
It's referencing the story and doing its own thing with it.
Yeah. Feels a little weird to have it be like a sequel.
Yeah. But I am really enjoying it. I also did find, weirdly, like very, very quickly, I ran out of SP. And so I think I just had to make the decision of, okay, I'm not exactly mapping those old mechanics and actions to this new format. I'm probably just going to mainly attack, because there
mostly
are also...
You just
melee.
Save that stuff for the bosses.
Right, exactly. There are bosses and bigger enemies occasionally.
Well, you unlock a thing very early on, or you can unlock a thing very early on. You have these like bond points that you use for doing little skill tree kind of stuff. And one of the things you can get is that your HP and SP automatically recharges after each battle.
Right.
So I was like, that's the thing that's annoying me the most. So I'm just going to save up to get that and then just boost that up as much as I can. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Because there's not just the Persona stuff. All of the cool stuff about Persona 5's combat that I really enjoyed as like a twist on JRPG turn-based combat was like, you can attack a bunch, but then if you attack... with like a certain weakness element to this, you know, enemy, they get knocked down and you do this all-out attack. Yeah. Or you can do these other little, like, there's something else in Strikers as well that activates occasionally. There's like a special mode or like move where you hold down or you press a couple of buttons at the same time. So it's not just mentally remapping these buttons. There's other things that maybe I'm not quite as good at using in real-time combat.
And they just take a while to have them all catalogued in your head, like a fighting game or something where you just need to be aware of them enough, aware of them more than the game really gives you enough combat early on, at least, to get used to them. Like, it gives you a quick little tutorial and it's like, all right, fuck you.
Yeah.
It assumes that you kind of know a lot about Persona, and it assumes that you know a lot about this style of game.
Right.
And it gives you, very brief tutorials kind of summing up both, but
I have worse retention of information than this game assumes you know. But maybe if you're more into fighting games, this sort of stuff is easier for you to, and like I think it's, there's not really an answer, because I think it's cool once you start getting the hang of it,
right?
And I wouldn't want it to be so slowly doled out that the first 10 hours are boring. So it just is kind of on you to get the most out of this game. You will want to spend some time sort of practicing what you're meant to
do. Yeah, the exact same thing I remembered halfway through playing this happened to me with Hyrule Warriors. First couple of hours, I was like, oh, this is fine. And you're on this map and it's very overwhelming in that game where you have all these different icons on the map and it never really tells you what they all do. But then once you work out the exact systems and the ways to build your characters up, strengthen your weapons, and then how you level up and again, what character works best for you and how the combos all work, it becomes, once it clicks and it's really instant when it does happen. It's so satisfying. And like that gauge thing that you mentioned, the two button thing,
yeah,
that is one of the big carryover things that is from Hyrule Warriors that I've noticed. It's a showtime gauge thing,
right,
which just kind of builds up over just you fighting and just doing damage, and it's just this big special move that just wipes out a huge area. So that's one of the things that I kind of noticed was like, oh, okay, this is here.
Right.
So, okay, yeah, I can get my grips with this. But, there is a lot going on, and I guess kind of similar to Persona 5 as well. Like, the having a gun feels very weird where you, like, even in that game, it's, like, so easy to forget that it's there because it...
It, like, helps with flying enemies, but, like...
Yeah, unless they have a specific weakness to gunfire, which, again, in Persona 5 was so rare, it does a very negligible amount of damage that it's almost not worth bothering. But in this, it is kind of worth it because it slows down time, which gives you a bit of a advantage there, and you can, you know, it switches the perspective a bit and you can see a bit better.
To be clear as well, I really enjoy how it plays. Like, I'm really into it at this point, but it does take a little while to sort of sink in. And I'm really enjoying the story again.
Yes.
All the characters are fun to hang around with again. I really like the new character.
Mm. Yep.
And, like, the villains are interesting again.
Yep.
It's got all the stuff from Persona 5 other than the sort of life day-to-day stuff. Like, you're not going to school, you're not doing all that, and then, like, a lot of the side characters, you'll go to their shop and it'll be like, I'm away for the summer.
Yeah. Right. yeah
Okay. Bye.
That is pretty funny, where they're like, yeah, this isn't a spoiler, but it's like very early on they're like, all right, we're gonna need supplies, let's go hit up the old gang of
we'll talk to the doctor again, we'll see her and catch up and everything. Oh wait, she's closed her doctor's office for 3 months.
Yeah, and then they go to the guy who sells you guns in the first one, and he doesn't even have an explanation.
No.
His shop's just closed up, and they're like, well, I guess that's it. I guess we just have to assume that every other shop in Tokyo is also closed down for July.
And I guess the fortune teller, the shogi player, that, like, it doesn't even bring half of them up.
Yeah.
That politician, he's fucked up, you know.
He's, like, gone. He did. Yeah.
So,
all these places I had jobs at, I can't go in there and ask for, if I could just, it's only been 3 months, can I do a shift, get a bit more cash?
Is that teacher still a maid as well? What's got, are we? So, yeah, that stuff is, like, kind of not, it's not disappointing or, like, it's just not there.
No, right. And even if it was disappointing, you'd have to remind yourself it's not a numbered sequel.
No, it's, like, a side thing.
It's a side thing.
It's crazy that it
does everything it can to convince you that it's not.
Right.
But I love that it exists. Like, I love that, you know, if we probably weren't, well, yeah, we weren't, I'd ever going to get a Persona 5 2.
Mm.
We'll get Persona 6, which will be its own thing. And, yeah, if this is the way that it happens, where you get to spend more time with these characters, I love that they're not precious about the IP and they go, we can chuck it on a different gameplay mechanic.
Well, because Persona 4 had a real sequel in Persona 4 Arena, the fighting game, was a direct sequel to that.
Right.
So there is, like, precedent, I guess, for them doing these weird...
Oh, and Dancing Starlight or whatever the fuck.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a really, really well-made... I don't know what the who the staff is and if there's any crossover, but it's written really well.
Yeah.
In the same style as 5. Like, it's very impressive.
I have a feeling
this is
that
just
it's
a separate studio.
Probably same with Hyrule, that it's like the mechanics of the battle stuff is Koei Tecmo.
Right.
And then all the other shit is like the people from the original company doing it. I believe that's how it worked with Zelda.
Or,
like, they wrote everything, and then Koei are doing the, like,
especially
the
villains.
Stuff.
Especially the villains are really in the vein of Persona 5, where they're, like, quite three-dimensional and interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, unique ideas.
Well, yeah, the best thing about a really good game in Persona 5 was the villains expressing these, like, sociological themes and issues and, like, stuff that was bubbling up in Japanese culture. And, yeah, it sounds like that's still there. I've only encountered the first one, but that certainly seems to represent something in society.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't, it never feels like fanfic or anything. I mean, that's, again, it is so strange that you so easily can forget, like, this is a side thing made largely by a different team.
Yeah, it does.
Mechanically.
It almost feels like Atlus just decided to chuck in a different fighting mechanic in their own, you know, like they just chose to.
Yeah.
Rather than a new company jumping in and making a different game.
And totally. to have a fighting, like a system in Persona 5 that was so tight and perfect and to basically keep all of the elements of that and change how it functions and they all still work is really impressive. Like you look at it and you go, this shouldn't be good. Like if someone said to you, yeah, you run around, but you're still pausing and still basically doing elements of real time, you'd go like, what? Why? Why not just do it? Why not just have it be turn-based? But it does. And the way that they've plotted out the jails feels like it takes advantage of, you know, the ways that battles function differently because you are actually running around in a real space. So you often end up in these little kind of arena things that are structured interestingly for these battles. They're not just like a backdrop for, you know, scrolling through a menu or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. It's great. And if you if you liked 5 and you're a bit hesitant about the change in style or whatever, just definitely give it a go.
Yeah.
It's really great.
It is absolutely a continuation of 5.
I think
I wouldn't bother playing it like you said, though, if you haven't played 5.
No. And I think we might have made the combat sound more complex than it needs to be because it seems like you also can just like run around hitting attack.
Right.
And you'll still... because what I'm enjoying is, moving through the story and being with the characters again.
Yeah.
And there's occasionally like these little bosses where you're like, oh, I should use that persona thing. But most of the time, you can just hit attack and run around. And
if you ambush and really then do a follow-up, you can take out most of them without having to really do any combat, at least in the early levels.
Similar to Persona 5 as well.
Yeah,
that's true,
Yeah, it's great. It's really cool. I never expected a sequel to this game and then never expected that it would be as good as it is.
Yep.
Yeah. But and even, when this got announced, I just assumed that it was like some weird side thing with just like maps, where you would just kind of run around and do the combat and that would be that. And then, reading from people who'd played it in Japanese, like, no, it's its own thing. It's like 40 to 50 hours. It's got like a long story. Mm. I can't wait to see what else happens and where it goes.
Yeah, same. Well, speaking of going, we're gonna.
Thanks for listening, guys. We're going to leave it there for this week. filthycasuals.com.au for all our social stuff. We've got the Let's Plays up on YouTube that we've been doing. We're doing Heavy Rain currently. That's been a lot of fun to do, so go check all of them out. There's like, how many are there now? Six
publicly available.
And 7 if you're on the Patreon currently.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of them there already for you to check out and binge on. We've also done a couple of other games on there that we've done to completion if you want to go and watch all of them. Get on the Patreon, get a bonus episode every week, get a early access to the YouTube stuff we were just talking about. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
I forgot this time. I'll just turn the levels all down. That'll do it. That's like a reference.
There we go. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.